having great power, and the earth was lightened with his glory. We're in the 18th chapter of Revelation, that's verse 1. Verse 2, and he cried mightily with a strong voice, saying, Babylon, the great, is fallen, and has become the habitation of devils and the hold of every foul spirit and a cage of every unclean and hateful bird. Back when Basil Thomas came here, I just kept my mouth shut because I didn't want to cause any conflict, and Basil's dead now. But Basil taught that this was actually a revived Babylon back over in Mesopotamia. And it caused problems because I was teaching something else, but I never said anything. But that's not Babylon back in Mesopotamia, because the great city was the city of Rome. And Babylon is used as an expression of a city that is wasted and a city that's spiritually corrupt and eventually falls. If you remember, because of some events that occurred and the anger of God toward ancient Babylon, which was over in between the Tigris and Euphrates River, primarily on the Euphrates River, God completely leveled it. And for a long time there was no city there, and the only thing that's there now is just a model city people can tour through. There is no official city there. So this is used in the Bible of something that is spiritually desolate. He's talking about Rome, saying Babylon the Great has fallen, become the habitation of devils, and the hold of every foul spirit and cage of every unclean and hateful bird. Birds are often pictured as spiritual corrupt things in the spiritual world. And this is what Roman Catholicism is. Now that's a hard thing to sell. You go to one of these large Catholic churches with a fairly large congregation up in one of the larger northern cities, and when they have their Easter, Christmas celebrations, and all the other pagan celebrations they've devised down through the ages, all the participants, the archbishop, the bishop, all the priests, and all the choir boys, all of it is magnificent. Magnificent, beautiful organ music, beautiful artistic singing of hymns, beautiful scenes of great, what would appear to be religious grandeur, all decked out in what we call a human display of a color array of beauty. But as Paul said to the priest, the high priest, he indicated that the Pharisees were full of dead men's bones. And that's what this is. On the outside, it looks so beautiful and so polished and so finished. And today, when I talk to Methodists or Presbyterians or people who have Episcopalians that have a sort of relationship with Catholics, they think I'm just an ungodly person to say all these horrible things. But the worst thing in the world is outward religion and a dead spirit within. For all nations have drunk the wine of the wrath of her fornication. The European nations started getting in bed with the devil by getting in bed with the Catholic branch that tore off of the original churches. And they began to follow a lot of the teachings, and they became Catholic nations. They had their official national religion was Catholic. That was true of Britain until Henry VIII decided he wanted another wife, and the Pope wouldn't let him have another one. And so he started the Church of England, which we call the Episcopalian Church here. And in France, the Catholic faith became the state religion. And for a long time, it was in all those provinces we looked at, all 53, or most of them, I should say, not all 53, it became the state religion. When Baptists started having some success because of the Protestant Reformation, which we were not a part of, we were Anabaptists, then we became extremely popular in Holland. And the King of Holland offered the Anabaptist a contract or the position of being the official state of Holland religion. And we turned them down. Now, all the nations of Europe drank of this. And as the Catholics began to spread across the world, as they spread particularly into South America, they found a virgin field of people that loved pagan worship, and they fell right in to the Catholic religion. And now the whole world has drunk of the wine of the wrath of her fornication, her departure from the truth of the living God. And the kings of the earth have committed fornication with her, became the official state religion, got in bed with the Catholic Church. And the merchants of the earth are waxed rich through the abundance of her delicacies. Now, Rome, on the Tiber, became the seat of all trade that was meaningful. And the trade that went all over the world, and I showed you the trade routes first night, were on Roman galleys and vessels. And with the passage of time, the Catholic Church, developing as the official state church of Italy and most of the European countries, became absolutely filthy, wealthy, and rich. And it has continued so until this day. And now, because of the immoral activities of some of the priests finally being exposed and uncovered, and if you think they're bad in this country, the priests over here look like little Lord Fauntleroy compared to those in France. But the French don't mind, because most of the men over there have at least one mistress, some two or three, and most of the women over there that are married have at least one stud or maybe two. And so they don't look upon any of this as being a big deal. And that's where this children pornography thing and exchanging children between families for each older adults to have sex with the children, that's where the net actually was uncovered recently. And I heard another voice from heaven saying, come out of her, my people, that ye be not partakers of her sins, that ye receive not of her plagues. I would like to have soft-pedaled all this when I went to other churches, and to some extent I did. And I would like not to have had this in the tapes that our church produced, and which we've sold all over the world. I almost didn't put the section in there about the Catholic Church. And what happened? I went down and did a recording down Little Rock, big studio, three huge cameras. I think over $1.5 million for the cameras. And all the recording equipment. This was a very well-organized and equipped studio. And when I did the one on the Catholic Church, I just got carried away. When I drove home that night, I thought, man, I said too much, way too much. I shouldn't have been that hard. Well, I knew it was the truth, but I said I shouldn't have been that hard. So I got home, and it got to bother me, and I called Jimmy Hefner, who was the one that was paying for the tapes to be made. I made a deal with him that if he'd let our church sell them, and then we would, and we could put the money into the church here and other things that are entailed around the church, missions, that I'd do it. He wanted to pay me for it, and I told him no. And so I called Jimmy and I said, listen, we got to take that out. He said, you know, I've been thinking about that all afternoon, ever since we finished this evening, I should say. So I said, I'll be back down tomorrow and we'll redo it. So I got up the next morning. I had slept that night, prayed about it, and thought about it. And I called Jimmy and I said, Jimmy, I said, I'm not coming. I said, what I told them was the truth. And I heard another voice from heaven saying, come out of her, my people, that ye be not partakers of her sins, and that ye receive not of her plagues. I said, I'm supposed to be a God-called preacher. And I'm supposed to preach the word. And if I hear anything about those peoples, I say, I may make them mad enough to kill me. Mafia may kill me. But I said, at least I've done what I was supposed to. I said, let's leave it just like it is. He said, you know, I think of the same thing. We'll leave it just like it is. If you ever look at that tape number 6 in that series we did, Man alive, it's a wonder the mafia didn't come after me. For her sins have reached unto heaven. God hath remembered her iniquities. Reward her even as she rewarded you, and double unto her, double according to her works. In the cup which she hath filled, fill to her double. How much she hath glorified herself, and lived deliciously, so much torment and sorrow give her, for she saith in her heart, I set a queen. She thinks she's the queen of heaven. And the city of Rome and the religious people there thought they were literally the religious queen of heaven. And no widow. They still think they belong to God. They think that the Anabaptists were the false religion. And they thought when they were killing all the Anabaptists, they were doing God a service. And shall see no sorrow. They thought they were the bride of Christ in the 19th chapter of the book of Revelation. They didn't think God had disowned them as a whore, as a fornicator that had cheated on her husband. They didn't think they were going to be punished and see any sorrow. They thought they were the true church, and they still do. But it's always been the persecuted groups that they've gone after that have represented the true church because they despise truth. Now, a lot of things go on in the world every day, but I'll guarantee you if the Catholics could get away with it, they'd kill every Baptist on the face of this earth. They can live with the Episcopalians, they can live with the Methodists, because they both believe you can lose your salvation, and they both believe the church is universal and invisible. They can live with them. They can't live with us, because they despise truth. Therefore shall her plagues come in one day, when God strikes against Rome in the latter portion of the tribulation period. It's going to be primarily on the last vial in the 16th chapter of Revelation. And there was a great earthquake, so mighty and so great. And the great city was Jerusalem in this case, because it's not specifically identified. And the great city was divided into three parts. The earthquakes continued to spread. And the cities, plural, of the nations, plural, fell. And great Babylon, Roman Catholic Church, and great Babylon came in remembrance unto God to give unto her the cup of the fury of his wrath. And the kings of the earth, verse 9, it's going to last for about 45 days. And Rome is going to sink beneath the Mediterranean Sea, which is going to come up into the Tiber River, and the whole area of Rome is going to sink down beneath it, just like the ancient port of Julius Caesar did just a few miles south of there during volcanic and earthquake activity in the past. And the kings of the earth who have committed fornication and lived deliciously with her shall bewail her and lament for her when they see the smoke of her burning. Now they're in ships, and they see the smoke of her burning. That's another reason it can't be actual Babylon, because Babylon is way up the Euphrates River, and it was non-navigable in those days, so that can't be old Babylon. It's spiritual Babylon, which in John's day was Rome, standing afar off for the fear of her torment, saying, alas, alas, that great Babylon, that mighty city, for in 1 hour is thy judgment come. Think of all the Roman Catholics. The vast majority are lost as a goose, very religious, all baptized, headed straight for hell. Remember, this is the 18th chapter. The rapture occurred on the blowing of the seventh trumpet. We're gone. Well, how do we explain to them? Well, they're going to explain us as the ones that went to hell. And then all of a sudden, wham! That seventh trumpet's blown, we go out, they think we went to hell, and then hell breaks loose on them. It says, in 1 hour is thy judgment come. His judgment's been waiting a long time, but it's coming. And the merchants of the earth shall weep and mourn for her, for hope no man buyeth her their merchandise anymore. The Catholic Church makes more money out of the sale of religious artifacts than you could ever possibly imagine. their volume of religious artifacts and religious objects sold in their stores across this land is a billion dollar monopoly. And that's where the Catholics buy all their little objects and trinkets and beads and necklaces and bracelets, and they charge a fantastic price for them. Can you imagine what it's going to be like when the area, the Vatican, where the Pope is, that they have long looked upon as God's personal representative on this earth, the city is wiped out. You talk about terror and horror, they'll have no one to lean on and nothing to sustain them. And that is why it says men's hearts failing them for fear and looking for those things that are coming on the earth. The merchandise of gold and silver and precious stones and of pearls and fine linen and purple and silk and scarlet and all fine wood and all manner of vessels of ivory and all manner of vessels of most precious wood and of brass and iron and marble and cinnamon and odors and ointments and frankincense and wine and oil and fine flour and wheat and beast and sheep and horses and chariots and slaves and souls of men. Now that's the way souls of men means slaves and the souls that others possessed. You take a look at all those things. That's pure unadulterated materialism. That's pure worldliness. That's what the world has to offer. And that's what the worshipers in Roman Catholic churches want. They are so materialistically oriented, so oriented for the things of the world, that they have to have a statue that they can see and taste and touch and feel and sense with their material fingers and their worldly hands and their worldly eyes and their worldly nose. They have to smell the odor of the incense. They have to kiss the feet of the statue. It's a pure materialistic religion based on all the riches of the world and everything that your creature desires. I'm surprised they didn't put butter pecan ice cream in there. And the fruits that thy soul lusted after are departed from thee. All these things that you wanted that meant so much to you. I grew up with a young boy, I won't tell you his name. Very fine boy. My family thought a great deal of him. Very intelligent. He wasn't a Baptist. He grew up, I used to go swimming with him. Very manly kid, very, very brave kid. I remember we went down, way down in the bayou, kind of a swampy area. Back then I didn't have good sense, still don't. And we went over the side of the railroad track, and we went out there in this awful old place. I'm surprised that the snakes weren't just jumping up at us. And there's this pond, this old deep place there, you know, looked deep enough. But an old fence had fallen down in it, and we didn't know it. His name was Freddie Livingston. And Freddie dove off in that thing. Man, he cut a gash on his head you wouldn't believe. Well, I got him back to the house. He didn't cry. Very strong personality. I remember my Uncle Judge, who was my hero, was very praising. He was praising him. And I was jealous because I thought, well, I'm the one who got him back here. Judge was my hero. So I was always a little jealous of that. Of course, that was wrong. I knew that. But Freddie took a different path from me. I never have much wanted any of the things of this world. All I've ever wanted is a roof over my head, enough to eat, a wife that loved me, and people that I could fellowship with and be with. God's blessed me and abundantly, and I love the things he's given me, but I've never been oriented that way. I've had a terrible problem with lust, but if it'll ease your conscience any, I've never been unfaithful to my wife, except in my thoughts at times, you know. But Freddie became a lawyer, studied hard, got a Fulbright scholarship, then went on up and worked for Senator Fulbright for years as his aide, became a very prominent lawyer in Batesville, very likable man. As I recall, he had a lot of motivation and drive for everything he could get out of life in the world. So it was quite a shock to me a few years ago when I found that he took a pistol, put it to his head, and killed himself. Now, there's only one thing I've ever found in this world that's lasting. It's the Lord and His Spirit and the promises that He has for us and the comfort and assurance that He's among us and in us. My life is this church. My wife this afternoon told me, she says, "You can't remember anything but the Bible." And it's true, I can't. But that's where my whole life is. This church is my life. And the church is not the building. It's you and the people that come here. I'm a part of this family. This is my life. So I love it. I'm not about to put a pistol up here and shoot myself in the head. A lot of people that are saved just don't realize what they really do have. "And thy fruits that thy soul lusted after are departed from thee." Well, mine aren't going to depart, because they're based on God's promises and the future promises. "And all things which were dainty and goodly are departed from thee." This is one of Kenneth's favorite scriptures. The dainty and goodly things are departed from thee. And thou shalt find them no more at all. Think of that. Going through life without Christ. Now, Freddie Livingston may be in heaven today. I don't know. But I know a lot of people that have spent their whole life chasing everything. And my favorite story, and you've heard me tell it quite often, but since some of you haven't heard this story, I'm going to tell it again because it's worth listening to. It's a true story. There was a man who started a restaurant, I believe, in New York City. And he began to work hard. He was very much success-oriented. And he built that restaurant up, and it was extremely successful. It was so successful that he started another one, and another one, and another one, and another one. And pretty soon, they're expanding all the way across the country, and they're clean out in California. He would get up 6 o'clock in the morning, go out and do his job, plan, work, scheme, profit margin oriented, spend his whole life at it. And he was good at it. He was a multi-billionaire. Well, like all of us, one day he got old, too old to live. And he was lying on his deathbed, and everybody knew it, and he knew it. And he knew he was about to die. And you know how it is, a lot of people want to hear their last words. I heard his last words. I don't remember if it was his son or his wife. Doesn't matter. Whoever it was put their ear right up against his mouth because they couldn't hear what he was saying. And here were his last words. "Slice the ham thin." And that told you his life. Slice the ham thin. He was interested still in making money. And you don't make money if you give big portions of ham because it's expensive. And he was still interested in making money when he died. That's tragic. Well, I've only got one more sheet, so I might... one more. "The merchants of these things which were made rich by her shall stand afar off for the fear of the torment, weeping and wailing, and saying, for where your heart is, there will your treasure be also." And here's where their heart was. Alas, alas, that great city. This is going to come to pass. Millions and millions of Roman Catholics are going to be left after the rapture. And they're going to see Rome destroyed. And their whole lives have been nothing but materialistically orientations of a falsetto form of life that perishes, whose end is in hell. Alas, alas, that great city, which was clothed in fine linen and purple and scarlet and decked with gold and precious stones and pearls. Rome is one of the richest places on this earth in the Vatican. They have treasures of art and gold and jewelry that date back to ancient times, and they are absolutely filthy rich. For in 1 hour, so great riches has come to naught. It happens suddenly and abruptly. And every shipmaster and all the company and ships and sailors and as many as trade by sea stood afar off. You can't even see ancient Babylon from over in the Persian Gulf because because you couldn't get up and navigate to Babylon, which was a long way inland. So this has to be Rome. And cried when they saw the smoke of her burning, saying, what city is likened to this great city? And they cast dust on their heads and cried, weeping and wailing, saying, alas, alas, that great city wherein were made rich all that had ships in the sea by reason of her costliness, purely, materialistically oriented, worldly faith in a God you can see and taste and touch and feel by representation of figures and images. For in 1 hour is she made desolate. Short, quick, abrupt. Rejoice over her, thou heaven, and ye holy apostles and prophets, for God hath avenged you on her. And a mighty angel took up a stone, now this is very important, like a great millstone, and cast to the sea, saying, thus with violence shall that great Babylon be thrown down, and be found no more at all, and the voice of harpers, and musicians, and of pipers, and trumpeters, shall be heard no more at all in thee, and of craftsmen of whatsoever craft he be, shall be found no, any more in thee, and the sound of a millstone shall be heard no more at all in thee, and the light of a candle shall shine no more at all in thee, and the voice of the bridegroom and of the bride shall be heard no more at all thee, for thy merchants were the great men of the sea. This is not figurative. When he says, for thus with violence shall that great city Babylon be thrown down, and shall be found no more at all. Port Julius, named after Julius Caesar, was the great port of Rome. A little further down the coast, it was the great port of Italy, I should say. Then a tremendous volcanic eruption occurred inland, an earthquake, and the whole city of Julius, a large city, all its buildings and everything, sank down, and the Mediterranean Sea came over it. And on days when waves aren't coming in off the Mediterranean Sea, you can get in a glass-bottom boat, and you can go over and look down and see all those ancient cities, all the buildings, still under the sea. God's going to burn Rome with fire. And Rome is going to sink, and she'll never be found again. It'll be like a great millstone was cast into the sea and never seen again. And in thee was found the blood of prophets and of saints and all that were slain upon the earth. The Lord holds off his wrath until the seventh trump. And while all of the things of the preceding verses we just covered are being poured out on false churches of Satan, the saved will be judged in heaven for rewards. We took off in the 11th chapter before the 16th, 17th and 18th chapters ever came along. In the 10th chapter of Revelation, verse 7, we were told when a mystery that Paul talked about in 1 Corinthians 15:51, behold, I show you a mystery, but we shall not all sleep, but we shall all be changed. Then Revelation 10:7, John said, now I'm going to tell you what the mystery is, the completion of it. In the days the voice of the seventh angel, when he shall begin to sound, the mystery of God should be finished, as he hath declared to his servants, the prophets. Revelation 11:15, the seventh angel sounded, and there were great voices in heaven, saying, the kings of this world have become the kingdom of our Lord and of his Christ, and he shall reign forever and ever. The kingdom of God is caught up in heaven. You have God, Father, Son, Holy Spirit. You have God in the person, I believe, of Jesus Christ. You have all the angels of God who chose not to follow Satan. You have all the saved of all the ages. They're there. They're going to be judged. Meanwhile, as soon as the seventh trumpet finishes, almost immediately, the vials of wrath begin to be poured out. The kingdom of God is intact in heaven. And all that's left on this earth is sin and ungodliness and lost people for all practical purposes. And he shall reign forever and ever. And here's what we'll be doing. And the nations were angry. Way back in the 11th chapter, they're angry. But they're not fighting. Thy wrath has come, meaning it doesn't come until the seventh trumpet. The time of the dead, that's the rapture. The dead coming up out of the graves. That they should be judged. You've got to resurrect them, bring them to life to judge them. And here's what you judge them for. That thou shouldest give reward unto thy servants, the prophets, and to the saints, and them that fear thy name, small and great, and shouldest destroy them which destroy the earth. You remember back in the 6th chapter of Revelation, in verse 5, just before the great earthquake in verse 6, which starts the last 3.5 years of the tribulation period, you remember in verse 5, you have a lot of souls, a bunch of souls, probably countless numbers, that are underneath the altar, or by the altar, beneath the altar. And they are crying out to God, "Oh Lord, how long wilt thou not judge us on the earth?" They're crying out for God to go back and judge those people that killed them and murdered them and butchered them and slaughtered them and persecuted them. Well, after we get judged up there, we may get to watch that. I don't know. But that's what they're crying out for. And if that's what they're crying out for, God may let them have it. And so that leaves us with 4 minutes. So, you all have any questions? You know that fellow that sits there and says, "Mr. and Mrs. Eubanks, that's our loan package.